The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 8th of May. I do hope you're all very well indeed. And we've another busy show for you, of course, between now and 11. The first hour dominated by our Friday panel. We've got lots to discuss. We want you involved in the conversation, of course. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 074 9125. Or email comments at highlandradio.com. You can, of course, watch the programme on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and also across our Facebook pages. Right. Let us say good morning to our Friday panel, Councillor Declan Meehan. Good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning. Great, thanks,
Greg.
Great
to have you back on the show. We also have Councillor Martin Hawley, Cathair Lough, Declan Meehan, Independent Councillor in the Milford Letterkenny Municipal District. Councillor Martin Hawley, Cathair Lough of the Lifford Stranorlar Municipal District. Good morning to you, Martin.
Morning, Greg. Morning,
and,
everyone.
And Councillor Martin McDermott, Cathair Lough of the Innishow Municipal District.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping? You kept us waiting there.
Sorry.
It's all right. No, it's fine. It's good to have you all with us. I'll start with you, Martin, seeing as I can see you. There's growing alarm over the scale of government overspend, which is now largely driven by a ballooning public sector wage bill. While the country's currently recording budget surpluses, these figures are heavily leveraged, as we all know now, against windfall corporation tax receipts. It's a volatile revenue stream from a small number of multinational firms. Now, financial experts warn that we're using once-off lottery winnings to fund permanent recurring costs like wages, leaving the state dangerously exposed if these global companies were to shift their profits elsewhere. That comes from financial experts, but we've heard it from government a million times as well. So my question to you, is this government being fiscally reckless by using unpredictable corporation tax windfalls to lock in permanent wage increases? And are we effectively setting the taxpayer up for a massive correction once this corporation tax bubble inevitably bursts?
Well, I suppose, Greg, the corporation tax is something that is, you know, it's growing this year again, I think, by about 8%. And it's something that I suppose the government have as certainly a windfall that they're able to use. I think it needs to be used in a manner that it keeps the finances of the country safe for the future. But it also, you have to make hay when the sun shines too, and we have to be able to do the things that we need to do in the country.
But we're not making hay. We're buying an awful lot of expensive machinery that we're going to have to keep going even when there's no hay to make.
Yeah, but at the same time, Greg, you know, there's a lot happening in Ireland. There's a lot happening around the country, and there's a lot of money being spent. And, you know, when that money's there, sometimes you have to use it in the best manner possible.
I don't want to sound in any way argumentative. This isn't spending on a rail link into Letterkenny. This is the 10% overshoot is on wages.
Yeah, and look, the wages is a problem. My fellow councillors, it's on here. You know, the increase in wages, the increase in the cost of living, the increase in everything that's going on at the moment is a problem. It's a problem in our own budget in the council when we sit down to do budgets. Everything is increasing, and it's the same as happening in Ireland. The same as happening all over the country. The same as happening all over the world. I do think that we do need to take a look at this at the minute, because I think the way things are going in Ireland and the way things are going in the world at the minute, that, you know, people are starting to rethink doing things, and you know, even when it comes to building or even when it comes to spending money, and there could be, you know, there could be serious days ahead.
So you know that, and I know that. So is the government being reckless with the money at the moment then? Because you're conscious of it and I'm conscious of it.
Reckless. Okay. I think reckless is a big word to use there, Greg. I certainly wouldn't say they're being reckless. But I do think that, you know, whoever's in government has to think of the future and has to make sure that we have money and for a rainy day. And I think that's what happened, you know, go back 20 years ago. We didn't think that way. But I think that now we do certainly have to think that way. And we have to be sure that, you know, come whenever happens. And look, the reality is, you know, if you look at history, there will be a recession. Those things go around in circles, and they always do. But we need to be prepared for that. And I think, you know, we can't be reckless in that manner. But I don't think anyone's been reckless at this moment in time.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, there's another 130,000 euro bike shed story doing the rounds again. That feeds into this sense amongst some, and those perhaps obviously who are default anti Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, that maybe public money isn't being spent correctly. Another example you could argue is spending billions of taxpayers' money rebuilding houses on dodgy foundations. That could be another argument for a misuse of public funds. But you have faith in how the government is handling the purse strings.
Yeah, I think they're certainly doing everything they can with the purse strings at the minute. But I mean, some of the points that you make there, Greg, in relation to the foundations, in relation to houses, you know, hopefully within the next week or so, the new standard IS 465 will be announced, which will maybe give us a bit of a clearer indication as to how and what way we can, or the housing agency can determinate on houses in relation to foundations. There's been a lot of work and a lot of very good work done by geologists and professors and scientists in relation to IS 465. So that should
But
you know
just in
make it very
relation to
clear.
that, and I don't want to labour the point, we've all known that foundations would need to be included in that. Yet the housing agency, the government, persisted in letting people rebuild on these foundations and outer leaves and all of that. Again, is that a classic example of the misuse of public funds? Because, you know, if I had gone through the scheme, I'm looking at the ground here thinking, well, what does this mean now for my future? We can talk about DCB more directly, but I'm just trying to give some examples, maybe some local examples of why people may feel that we're not looking after the public money as
Yeah,
best we could.
but I think it's important to be clear there, Greg, that in relation to IS 465 and the new standard, we don't know as of
Okay, we might
today
not
what
include it. Okay,
exactly
I get you.
what that standard is going to say in relation to foundations, whether they will include or whether they won't
Did you see that
include.
video of the? Did you see that video of the Hugh, the older gentleman,
Yeah.
and he described himself as such. Did you see that video of him crushing the foundations in his hands?
Saw that.
Yeah.
Saw that. So again,
Be hard to
there has
trust.
been
It'd be hard
there
to
has
trust the
been
science if they said the foundations are all right
there
with
has
that.
been a number of foundations tested as part of that, and you'd have had scientists and geologists on your show that was part of that and that done those tests. So we'll have to wait to see, hopefully next week
We'll
or
see, yeah.
shortly, that will let us know exactly what we're able to do there.
Okay, right, Councillor Declan Meehan, independent. How would you grade the government's control of the public finances?
Well, look, I think that an awful lot of money is being spent where it doesn't need to be spent. We've obviously seen projects which have constituted enormous wastes of money, over expenditure and no governance oversight of those within various government departments. I think one of the other things, just to kind of point out, linked to the issue of defective concrete blocks, is 25% of people who have gone through remediation on the enhanced scheme have, you know, gone through an option of outer leaf replacement or some equivalent, i.e., not full demolition. And I believe that to be a waste of taxpayers' money in the vast majority of cases. And I think my colleagues in the council here would agree with that. Notwithstanding, obviously, what Martin had said there about the IS 465 review coming out, but we're years into this, and a quarter of houses that have been remediated have been done contrary to current science. So that's one example. I think when we're talking as well, Greg, about the over-reliance on corporation tax receipts, I mean, it is staggering and quite frightening to look at how reliant we are on it. Over 50% of revenue from corporation tax in Ireland is coming from just 10 companies. And when you take it down to the top three companies, it's almost 42%. So it is undoubtedly an over-reliance on that. And as you say, for regular expenditure, like wages and to keep the country going, it's not a sustainable model. And look, I suppose nobody wants to think about the dark old days post-recession, post-2008. But one of the biggest things that came out of that, from, I suppose, kind of recommendation for government fiscal policy was that our tax base needed to be broadened, not narrowed. And we have a very narrow tax base in this country. And we have an over-reliance, not just on corporation tax, but on the tax on productive income, i.e., your income tax that employees pay. And what we've seen, particularly since 2014, under the various Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael governments in that time, is actually an awful lot of slashing of tax, whether that is USC, PAYE, whether it's inheritance tax, whatever. And some of those are good, and some of those genuinely help people. And that's not to say that they don't. But the reality is that we are constantly slashing the tax base, we're narrowing it. And that is something that isn't going to
Yeah,
stand
but
us in.
what you surely should do then in this situation to continue your argument, you tax the rich more. There's an awful lot of people
Exactly.
that are in. I mean, we've got what is it, 360 billion euro in savings deposits here. So tax the
Well,
rich more.
Greg, that would exactly be my point. And I think that when people hear that, they think they're richer than they are. And I think that when we're talking about taxing wealth, we're talking about real wealth. We're talking about rather than having an over-reliance on income tax and taxing employees, regular middle earners, that we need to move that higher in the band and that we need to tackle high earners and people of high individual wealth a lot more. And one of the ways in which we can do that is through a proper property tax and a land tax, a derelict sites register, all of these things that haven't really been working, that haven't been collecting the revenues that they should. I'm not talking about people's family homes. I'm talking about people who have land that is laying vacant, second and third, fourth, fifth properties
But
that are
that's
laying
not
vacant.
politically that's not politically popular,
Well,
going
I
after
imagine
pe
it would
going
be
after
political.
people's assets.
I imagine not family homes is what I'm
No, I
saying.
know, but they're
Yeah.
assets, yeah.
Yeah, they're assets. But I mean, the vast majority of people in this country, Greg, don't have those assets. So who is it politically unpopular with? The other thing that I'll point to is that we have a VAT rate cut coming up now for hospitality that between July 1st of this year and the 31st of December next year is going to cost us the guts of a billion euro. And that has not been targeted enough. And what we are seeing from that VAT rate cut is actually a huge cash bonanza and a cashback for multinational firms like McDonald's and Burger King's and huge chains like that. So when we talk about the government's management of purse strings and we talk about the consistent and persistent tax cuts that we've seen since 2014, what we're actually seeing is some of them dressed up as helping ordinary people and ordinary business people, but actually an awful lot of it is a kickback to investors. And another example of that is the VAT rate cut on apartments. 80% of apartments bought in Dublin last year were bought by vulture funds and investment funds. So that does not help
Yeah, but
homeowners,
it
but
doesn't help
stress
home
debtors doing
owning.
so.
It doesn't help home owning, but it does help apartment availability.
Yeah, sure,
Yeah.
absolutely. In your opinion, it does help availability, but we know that investment funds and vulture funds are keeping apartments that they're buying empty in order to drive up the price of their
Well, that
asset.
shouldn't be. I mean, that should literally should not
But it
be
is the
allowed,
case
though.
because they're not being taxed progressively enough for leaving them vacant. So all
Okay.
these things are linked, and we need to broaden the tax base, and we need to tax wealth rather than income for middle earners.
Councillor Martin Harley, do you have concerns with the spending patterns in this country? I mean, if it was a home, if it was a household, it would be unsustainable. I think we can all agree on that. But obviously, I'm comparing apples and pyramids. But what do you think, Martin?
Yeah, it is. I think like the last few years, I think I suppose especially the President Trump came into power and talked about bringing multinationals back home again. That was a big one, and I know there's big discussions happening about how much it's going to cost to allocate of all the multinational American companies. And of course, we know that well because in Letterkenny, we have a lot of American companies, and it's a big. There's a lot of jobs are at risk
See,
if that did happen.
I wouldn't be concerned about like I think we give the big companies that employ people good value for money. I mean, this corporation tax is actually just profits made in other countries ran through here. Is there a separation between, a big big American company that actually employs here and works here versus, you know, the likes of an Apple that probably has a PO box on a some sort of business park in Dublin somewhere. Not literally, but you know what I mean?
I understand that a lot of the companies, that the big three, some a lot of their workers will be in other parts of Europe. But it's we have to be realistic as well. We have a very highly educated people in this company, and that's why a lot of the companies are coming here. It's because we have the educated people to do them jobs. It's not just because of the corporation tax or the, as we people say, the great tax rate they're getting. We have the staff to do the jobs, and that's why they're coming here, and this is why they're staying here, and they're not moving. And even a lot of the companies talked about that they wouldn't be moving even if the tax rates changed, because that they have the quality, they have the skilled people to do the jobs here. We talk about broadening the tax base there. That was something, Gareth Fitzgerald said that back in the 80s, and he said that we were cutting taxes too much, and that was it was very worrying, and we've seen that. Then we had two recessions after that, so that there is a worry there. We and then we talk about taxing the rich, but what way do we tax the rich? Because I listened to Michael O'Leary in an interview there lately, and he said that if the taxes changed in this country, he'd be out of here. He would move everything out of Ireland. And so we have to be careful what way we start talking about taxing the rich.
Is that not, it's, we're it's always very, told that, and I think that's the rich that say that, saying, though, isn't it? I
mean, saying these things, but yeah. It's but the it's, people it, are a lot of the but, employers.
Is that? I mean,
you see, E.P. McManus, who gave £1 million to every GA club, every county there, a lot of years ago. Are we going to do the same with people like that? So it's a cheap talk, I think, really.
Yeah, do you want to come back in on that, Declan? You know, if we tax the rich, they'll flee.
Look, this is a tale as old as time, the scaremongering that, you know, people who create wealth, that people who create employment will all suddenly leave. There's sufficient opportunity here for wealthy people to remain. When we're talking about taxing wealth, taxing additional assets, taxing assets, particularly homes, properties, sites for potential residential or commercial development, hoarding those in order to increase their value. I don't see the value in retaining those people if that is their sole source of wealth.
Okay, Martin McDonald, so, what's your view? Who do you agree with there, or maybe if your own angle on this? I mean, you look at budgets and assessments of budgets that are done independently, and it's the rich that seem to get richer, and the poor and the squeezed middle either, you know, stand still or even get worse off. Would you like to see the rich taxed more, or would you share Martin's concerns that you do that, you lose the talent pool?
I think we have to be careful on that, Greg, but there's certainly, you know, when it comes to budgets, the middle income earner is the one that, and I feel that, is the one that never gets very much out of it. You have the people that's making a lot of money that seem to get the breaks, and you have the other end of the scale that always get an increase in rates. But that middle income earner, the families that have few children and both are working and paying a mortgage, living through that middle income, they always seem to find themselves in a very difficult situation. And, you know, if there's one thing that I would like to see in the budget, it's some way of helping that middle income earner.
Yeah, but where would you get that money from? Would you be happy to tap up the rich to help the squeezed middle?
Well, again, you know, there is ways and means of doing that without taking it to a point where we're pushing the rich out of this country. The very wealthy, we need them for employment. But at the same time, I think that there's ways that they can help and put a bit more money back into the system.
I think listeners would be shocked how little tax the very wealthy in this country. Like, does JP McManus pay tax in this country? You referenced him earlier on, Martin. Does he pay tax here?
There's a lot of tax in Ireland.
Does he? Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm not being smart. JP McManus is not tax resident in Ireland. He lives in Switzerland 183 days of the year. And in 2016, in a US court case, it was found he hadn't paid tax in Ireland for 20 years. Now, of course, he employs lots of people here. And he plays it one way or other, but just on his income and his wealth, Martin, he doesn't pay any tax here. But that's just as a point of clarification. It's easy to get things mixed up. The case of young Aaron Langan from Lahey, we had his parents on the phone on the programme here yesterday. It's highlighted a major gap in our healthcare system. Aaron is currently awaiting HSE approval for a life-altering treatment that could offer a massive benefit to his quality of life and his family's daily routine. While the medical potential is clear, the family remains in a state of uncertainty, waiting on administrative speed to catch up with clinical hope. So this is a drug that's been approved. It's available in Northern Ireland. It's available in Britain and elsewhere. And he has a condition whereby his muscles are wasting away, and it's almost on a daily basis. He has recently found himself having to use a wheelchair. This drug will slow that down and give him a chance, but there is a delay in the HSE approving it. So my question is, when a treatment offers a clear, significant benefit to a child like Aaron, is it morally defensible for the HSE to delay access through administrative due process? Or should we have some sort of a pathway or a mandatory fast-track system for rare paediatric conditions? Martin McDermott, I'll start with you. I think you're muted, Martin. Sorry, it's just to make sure I get to hear you. No, yeah, I can't hear you. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I said, when you listen to that story of Aaron, it's extremely sad and extremely difficult for both him and his parents. I think, you know, the HSE, we've had these stories a few times before where people needed specific drugs to help with conditions, and the drugs were available in other parts of the world, or even, as you say, in Northern Ireland, and we weren't able to access them here in this country. There needs to be absolutely a fast track for a drug that can help someone, a drug that can change the life of a child or an adult or anyone. And that has already been proven in other countries. There has to be some way, and there should be a fast track for the HSE to be able to deliver that drug to people. Because, I mean, like, this doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense when you can go over the border and it's available and it's working for people, and then we come to the Republic of Ireland and we can't access it through the HSE. There's just too much red tape involved, and it's the same with a lot of things that determines and stops people from accessing treatment that's available in other parts. And, you know, Greg, it's very sad that we're in that situation where people can get the help that they need and we can't deliver it. And I think the HSE need to take a good look at themselves in these kind of cases, from the Department of Health the whole way down, and take a look at how we as a country can this is what we should be doing. These are the types of things we should be doing as a country. We should be making sure that we're able to get the right treatment, the right medication to the people that need it. And clearly that's not happening.
And I think you know, in reality, say, for instance, you need capacity or something, say it's to do with operations or what have you, there are obviously going to be practical problems in going just as quick as you might want to go. But this is really a cost-benefit analysis. This is a desktop exercise. This is people sitting around a table and going, the benefit really doesn't map the cost. We're going to have to go back to the suppliers and see if we can pair a little bit more off this. But you're a family sitting in Lahey, and your pride and joy, and we can all put ourselves in that family's position, is deteriorating, and this awful emotional pressure on the whole family and on this young lad as well, just 9 years of age. It has to be removed from this cost-benefit conversation, surely. And the money actually is at the very, very top end. It's around 300k, like.
Yeah, it's the money is not even shouldn't even be a question, Greg. The money, this should never be about money or about anything else when it comes to a child's health. It should never be about money. And I know you've had people on your show maybe a couple of years ago where there was a similar situation where a drug was needed, and it was the same push and shoving to get the HSE to move to get that drug delivered. I think that drug was delivered at the time and it was brought in, and that then say people were able to access that drug. But we're back at the same place again with another child, and we just shouldn't be there. We just shouldn't be there.
Councillor Martin Harley, what's your view?
Well, firstly, Greg, I mean, no child should be left to suffer in this manner. And as Martin said there, we've been down this road, and there has to be some change. And we talk about the drug companies, and that we need to be. They seem to have a stranglehold over us on the price of when a new drug comes on the market. They seem to have a stranglehold for so many years. I know they do put billions into research for new drugs for different things, but they seem to, any investment they put into it, they seem to get it back very quickly because the price they charge for the drugs. And it's until that point that it seems to be that the price of the drug doesn't seem to come down till they have the money they've invested and research and getting all that until that stage happens, that they don't bring down the price of the drugs. But we have to, there has to be a special fund within the HSE for cases like this. If we look probably nationally, there probably wouldn't, on the overall scale of things, a lot of these issues could be sorted. And as I say at the start there, no child should be left to suffer like this, and no family should be going through this. And Ireland deserves a chance the same as every other child who is born into this country. So,
and this simply is not in any way, this is in terms of us working together, and it's not in any way to make any political point. But if you haven't already, with the likes of yourself and Martin McDermott, raise this up the line with the contacts that you have in government to try and make them see that this is a real young lad that could, you know, really have a better life.
Yeah, definitely. I know that we even talked about it to Manus Boyle, Senator Manus Boyle, no later than yesterday. And I know Manus will be bringing it up in the Shannon next week. So, I mean, this is something that it doesn't matter what. It's not about party. This is not about party.
No, 100%.
I don't like that at all. It's just getting some pain relief and some quality of life for Aaron going forward.
Councillor Meehan.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a really difficult situation that, you know, Aaron Langan's in and his parents are in. And my heart goes out to them. And when we're talking about this, obviously, it's so important to remember that people are at the centre of this, families are at the centre of this. And this is but one example of countless, well, you know, not countless, but hundreds of cases across the country in terms of rare diseases where drugs have not yet been approved for reimbursement. I would not like anyone belonging to me to be at the centre of a cost-benefit analysis. And I know that no one on this panel would like that either, and nobody wants that. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, costs come into it. And I think that where there is a drug that improves the lives and the quality of life of anyone who is suffering, costs shouldn't come into it.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying there, because I think we are also realistic to understand that it can't be a blank checkbook either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely right. But here is the thing that I was struck by last night. I was watching Primetime, Professor Michael Barry was on, and he has the unenviable task of negotiating prices with pharmaceutical companies, right? That is not a job anyone would like to do and have to go on and justify why they're not approving or they are approving it for reimbursement. But I was struck by one of the things that he said, and he said when he was confronted by the presenter and said that, you know, there's a much higher rate of rare disease drugs approved for reimbursement in countries like Germany, Italy and Spain. And he came back and said, well, that's no surprise because, number one, they're larger markets. Mm. So pharmaceutical companies will negotiate with them much more quickly.
Yeah, but can I say something in relation to that, though? I thought in the past, right, why can't we are in a union, right?
That's exactly what I was going to say, right?
So why can't we hitch our wagon to Portugal? I think we did in the past and sort of say, well, or Germany or whichever country is, and say, right, we will, you know, can we be part of your negotiation? Because we're so small, the take from whatever they negotiated would be relatively small. Sorry to cut across you, Declan. Maybe
yeah,
we're
but
completely
one,
on the
one
same
of the
page.
Other things that he said was not only is it just a price that we're negotiating on an individual basis, but because we're small fish And you know, I hate for anyone listening to this that's affected by this to for this to be broken down in this way. But because we're small fish, in relative terms, then they're actually even just taking longer to come back with a price
Yeah, of
offer
course. Yeah.
to the HSE.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about there, Greg, is teaming up with another country. What I'm suggesting, what I'm saying is, wouldn't it be great if Ireland, during its presidency now of the European Union, actually pushed for the EMA not only to regulate drugs and approve them for use in the European Union, but for the European Union to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies en masse as a single market, as a bloc, in order to get the best price and to get the quickest turnaround from approval to actually the introduction of that drug into the market for reimbursement. And there's examples of this that have happened. So the COVID vaccine was negotiated with pharmaceutical companies on a European Union-wide basis. So why can't we do that regularly for rare disease drugs as well? It puts us in a much stronger position to get a much better price for governments, but it also
Yes.
crucially puts the patient and their families at the center of it because it will deliver the medication that they need much more quickly.
And I get what you're saying, and that is a very interesting look at the big picture, and we need to. And I'm going to be a bit tabloid here and say, we know though the cost in this case, it ranges from 90,000 to 360,000, I think, is depending on the weight of the child. And I'm going to break it down into something that's going to sound very populist. They're talking about a 35 million euro statue in Dublin. I think it's about 100 kids, 100 children could be treated with this drug for the price of that. Now, I know it's a lazy comparison, and I put my hands up and say that, but one can't get away from that
And
fact.
just, I suppose, just to say, right, I think that we're all in agreement here that whatever stops need to be pulled out to make this drug available and approved for reimbursement should be done so. And the Irish government and the HSE should make provisions for that and budget available for that. But I think that we need to think more long term as well, because this is going to come up again and again. We had the drug for cystic fibrosis a number of years ago. This is just going to happen again and
Yep,
again
for
as
sure.
medicine advances,
Of
which is
course.
good, but we need to be
But we
able
can,
to have
yeah,
a
but we need,
long-term strategy and tackle it as a
and you're
union, not as
spot
one
on,
individual
but
small state.
spot on, but I'd love to see this one extracted out of the, sure, we've seen it before. Not saying that that's what you're saying, is saying, right, there is seems to be a special case here. It's not just Aaron, it's other kids as
Yeah,
well. And I'm
I agree.
so pleased to hear Manus Boyle is going to raise it nationally. And I hope our other public representatives do as well. Back with more after these. Texter says, morning, Greg. Looks like the fascists and far-right Nazis are making massive strides in the UK. Independent Ireland now faves to win Galway by election, neck and neck with Fine Gael, it has to be said. Dáiland Radio and other government mouthpieces will have to up their game with the usual smears and subtle propaganda. And I read that because I like Dáiland Radio. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but I think it's relatively clever. Any commentary on what's happening? I wouldn't describe Reform as far right, to be honest with you. I think they're just they're different to Labour, and I think they've softened their approach on a lot of what you might call right wing. I'm going to use that phrase instead. Big political shift in Britain, Declan, or are they just giving Keir Starmer a kicking?
Yeah, fascinating that you don't think that Reform UK is a far-right party and you think that they're just softer than Labour on some
No,
issues.
no, no. I don't believe they're soft on Labour at all, at all. Sorry, softening their own positions. They've got into bother for having, candidates of different races and stuff like that. There, right? So, no, I think they're right wing, far right wing. I don't know, but anyway, carry on.
Yeah, I think their stance on an awful lot of issues around obviously immigration being the paramount one, but also in relation to a lot of social issues would certainly put them far right of centre, let's say.
Yeah.
And look, this was inevitable. I think it's an inevitable movement in England in particular. We're not seeing any results yet, obviously, from Scotland and Wales. These are, a lot of the English councils that had voted yesterday. And I guess there's no surprise. And the surprise there is that people were hoping for a change and a difference by electing a Labour government. And what they got was more of the same, of essentially Tory policies on almost everything. And I think that there was a real disenchantment with politics of the established parties and that kind of more traditional two-party choice in England, in particular between Labour and Conservatives. And I think that what we've seen is a real fracturing. And I think that what we're going to see, particularly in Scotland as Wales, is obviously, you know, the nationalist parties. No surprise in Scotland, where they've been in power for now on 20 years, but having another go and another 5 years of their rule there. And what you have is the smashing, by the looks of it, of Labour, which has been in power since devolution there in 98. So, and Plaid Cymru going to be probably in the driving seat there for government over the next 5 years. And I think that there's just this increasing and growing frustration with Westminster politics across Britain. It's very evident. And that what we have, as I say, is a fracturing of politics. People going further to the right with Reform and people going further to the left with the Greens,
yeah.
Which are, you know, going to make historical gains today as well. And I think that when the centre fails, which it has done, and a party that's meant to be of the left in Labour has actually gone to the centre right, I think that you inevitably have this fracturing of the political landscape and political support as demonstrated in these elections. I don't doubt also that it could be temporary, but the concern is that this is a more progressive and steady march towards the right in England in particular, though not in Scotland and Wales.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that you know, if you have a populist party like Reform, which is what they are, right, and they're doing so well with the public, they're obviously reflecting the public's view. So, I mean, an entire nation isn't far right or right wing. It's just that they, the likes of Reform are speaking what they would see as common sense. Martin McDermott, do you see the same happening here? You know, that the likes of Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil will all end up finding themselves being a bit wishy-washy in the middle and not, you know, right-wing enough. And I hope people who are listening understand when you refer to a party as right-wing, it's not some sort of a racist slur or anything like that there. But do you anticipate something like that similarly happening in coming elections in this country? It hasn't happened yet, if the truth be told, because these candidates have been, for the most part, you know, roundly rejected, if the truth be told. I don't want to get shot for saying that, but that is demonstrably a fact, right? So where do you see it going into the future, Martin?
Yeah, I think, Greg, this is happening in all over the world at the minute. I think it's happening in a number of different countries. I think in England at the minute, there is concerns with the government that's there. I think England's going through a very difficult patch, and I think coming out of Europe has really caught up with them, and people are finding it very difficult to live there, and the cost of living is taking its toll. It could happen in any country, Greg, and it could happen here as well. And it's quite possible that, you know, if there was an election tomorrow morning, that there would be a swing towards
Do you think it's an observation that There is an influence on the current government's policies, you could argue that, which is quite interesting in that, as I've already mentioned, a lot of these candidates never got elected, yet right-leaning points of views are influencing. You've seen Jim O'Callaghan and the language that's being used now would have been described as far-right 18 months ago. I don't mean that in any way as an insult to him, I'm just saying that. So, you know, maybe this government is seeing that it needs to move further in that direction to appeal, you know, to become more popular effectively.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we do have to move a little bit that way. I think we have to get our ducks in a row in Ireland as well. We have to start making sure that, you know, our own people are looked after first. We have to make sure that when it comes to housing or it comes to health or it comes to anything in the country, that our own people are looked after first. But that doesn't mean that we turn people away either. But I think things got maybe a little bit out of hand with all the wars that's happening all over the world. And we were being influxed by a lot of people from a lot of different countries over the last couple of years. And I think, to be fair to Jim O'Callaghan, he has, you know, steadied the ship in relation to that.
As
and
I say, it wasn't
get it leveled out as much as possible.
I want to bring, if that's OK, sorry to cut across you, but I do want to finish with you. I just want to bring Councillor Harley in on this one. Martin Harley, observing what's happening in Britain, is this just a trailer for what we're going to see here?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be a big fan of Nicolas Farage, in fairness.
Well, he doesn't speak too highly of you either. No, I'm only joking.
Definitely sleep occasion out on that one, anyway. but no, he brought Britain out of the EU, and then he jumped ship. He left for a while then when it suited him. People living in England now realise the difficulties of being out of Europe now, and the, as Dermot said there, about the, there's a lot of problems in England, a lot of problems in England because of being out of Europe. And you talk about even the farming community that we talk about in Ireland, but I'll tell you, things are very bad in England because of being out of Europe, because they're getting none of the benefits that Europe was giving towards it. So there can be, there'll be changes across, there's been changes across Europe on different things. We've seen after the collapse of institutions after 2008 that countries like Greece, where they decided they were going to put all the government out, and they brought in this left wing government that was going to sort everything out. There's even politicians from this country went out to celebrate with them, and they weren't in power 2 years till they were gone again.
Okay,
because people realised after a while, okay, it's grand. We have these wish lists, but it's okay shooting from the ditch, but when you get into power, you have to make decisions. They mightn't be popular decisions, but we look at the Healy Rays, when a decision had been made, they jump ship because it wasn't popular in Kerry, so they jump ship for their own reasons. So this is what we have to be realistic about going forward.
Councillor Martin Harley, Cathaoirleach of Lifford Stranooler Municipal District, thank you for your time. Have a great weekend. I do appreciate it.
Thank you,
Declan Meehan, always good to have you on the show. Look after yourself. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Greg. You too.
And Martin, if I could hold on to you for a moment, because I think we've all been, and I've struggled really even to find a way to correctly mention this, to try and sort of capture the sense of loss and devastation. But I know you would know Lewis Kelly and his family, an 18-year-old football star and student from Culdaff in Ashoni, passed away at Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, having taken ill at the weekend. And I know it's absolutely devastated the community. And Lewis, in his short years on this planet, seems to have made such a huge impact.
Yeah, Greg, it's a difficult time for the people of Northern Ashoni, particularly the Kelly family. Thank you, Michelle, their children and the wider Kelly family circle. And you don't expect your son to go to play football and come home and go to work and end up coming back home from Dublin in a box. It's nobody expects that for their child, and nobody should ever have to bury their child. And this sense of grief among the community is just overwhelming. And you know, and within Mallon GAA, within Culdaff Football Club, within Glengiad, and within Glenelly, that circle in Northern Ashoni has been devastated. The school in Carndonagh, where he went to school, just the people are numb at the minute as to what has happened. And all we can do, Greg, as a community, is be there for them. You know, try and do our best, and over the last number of days and over the next days, weeks and months ahead, to be there for them, to do whatever we can. And I have to say, our community has come together, as we always do, to make sure that every single thing is done for the family in every way we can. But it's just heartbreaking for everyone in that area, and particularly heartbreaking for the Kelly family.
Indeed. May Lewis rest in peace, and may, you know, the family and his friends, you know, it's really popular in school, sixth class, probably plans made, you know, been with his school friends and his friends and the teachers and everyone for so long. And then just, it's very hard for us as humans to process the fact that then
everyone's been really affected by this, Greg, and the children that he went to school with. Lewis, and everyone is saying the same thing. He was such a genuine, nice young fella, and everyone had a good word on him, both the teachers, all his fellow students, all his fellow football club members in Kildaff in particular, and in Mallin GAA in particular. And you know, it's just devastating for all them as well. And okay. But you know, look, it's mostly devastating, as I say, for his family, and we are there for them, and just to, so that they know that everyone in the community is there for them, and we'll do everything we can to help them over the next period of time.
Okay, thank you, Martin. I really do appreciate it. That's Councillor Martin McDermott, and from all of us here, and I'm sure all of the listeners, all the love and prayers and strength to the Kelly family and the wider community to. That they will need, that they hopefully can draw on at this most difficult of times for them. We're thinking on you. Some of your comments coming in so far this morning. I totally agree with Declan Meehan. Tax the wealthy, not young high earners. On a different note, can I ask why so much of the road at the hospital roundabout on the Glenvar side is being taken away? Appears like there'll only be one lane approaching the roundabout. That is two quite different points of view. But it's no problem. That's good. Gregory, derelict buildings. Ask your guests, what about the lovely derelict four-storey building that's a home for birds now at St. Connell's? That could be used for an outpatients department or a storage area. Instead of millions being paid out annually to the private sector, those funds could go towards areas that people have to fundraise for every year. Yes, certainly. But the problem is, and it's not a problem we should not be fit to overcome, to move beds around in Letterkenny University Hospital, there's a paper trail to even do that, let alone, you know, repurpose an entire structure. Read the discussion on tax this morning. Apple employs approximately 6,000 people in Ireland, pretty crammed in a P.O. box. Also, instead of raising taxes, maybe a good idea to think about how the existing taxes are being spent. Yeah, well, that was a chuckaway remark, if you know what I mean. Their activity outside of the country versus within the country are there's a huge difference between the two. Right now, let me see. Sorry, that's not what I'm looking for here. They're spending plenty of money, all right. 137,000 for a bike shed in Kerry. Tell these people to get real. Another, what about the 35 million euro statue in Dublin? Yeah, indeed. Rhi Aaron, this is our young friend from Lahey. The child looking for this life-saving drug. There are over 2 million tax-paying people in Ireland. What would it cost me to get the child the drugs? Even if they added an extra euro to our taxes, you could get the 2 million easily. A few extra euro would not cost as much, and Aaron would get much-needed drugs. And again, and it's interesting, this is in another space, it's not a shortage of money. It really isn't. It's the in terms of the budget, the health budget, it's irrelevant. It's small change. It's lost down the back of the sofa. But I appreciate your willingness to sort of say, look, at if it's about more money, we can do that. Does your panel have any thoughts on the mess in Remelton at the minute? No sensible traffic control, no parking for residents, and businesses being hit big time. Great to see money being spent, but there's no reason to have the whole town a building site. Thank you. Is that a general view in Remelton? Is this the eggs before you get to enjoy your omelette? Councillor Declan Meehan talking about a waste of taxpayers' money. Wasn't he one of the councillors that voted for the useless cycle lanes we're seeing or being made now in Letterkenny at the minute? Yeah, but there are two big schools of thought in relation to them, whether they are a waste or not, and to get more people out and active. It's a tricky one. Some people are looking at the long game. Some are saying, well, what about the short game? And on it goes. But yes, he is. I'm a single mother with a child with a disability. We built an extension for their needs. That extension is falling apart. The grant, €72,000. The cheapest cost is €150,000. I've tried every avenue to borrow money, but I've not been successful. Where do I go? We'll have a conversation with you off air, if that's all right, and see if there's anything we can do to advise or help progress that. Right, okay, that's that one. Morning, Greg. We'd like to wish our parents, Sheila and James Gallagher in Mullock Duff, a very special golden wedding anniversary. Hope you have a lovely day and weekend from your family, Jason, Shane and Leona, and all the grandkids home and away. And they're looking for a particular song. We don't have time for songs. We barely have time for chat now, but we will pass that on to someone a little later on. Do remember that the roots of the third largest party in Ireland, Fine Gael, were the blue shirts, and some of their voters would still be of that mindset. Hi, Greg. Can you ask Declan Meehan to have a look at signage that was done on the Kerrykeel Glenvar Road just outside Kerrykeel by the council? Kerrykeel Tidy Towns are doing a great job, but this is a disgrace. And can you ask Martin Harley why the Darkness Into Light has been cancelled in the Twin Towns? I don't know the ins and outs, but I am my understanding it was about getting enough people together to actually run it. this is completely separate to that question, but if it were I, I think our attitude in this country to mental health and how we treat mental health and the importance of an intervention when someone needs it, I think it's a conversation we need to widen out. I'm driving around and I'm seeing an awful lot of signs saying, let's stop suicide. But I would love to know, and this is just, I think, should be public information. I would love to know we know 100,000 calls and texts were put in 2024 to Pieta, but what I don't know is, and the information isn't there publicly, and I would like to see it, to be honest with you, is how many of those calls were answered or what the drop rate was. They received 100,000 calls. How many of those calls and texts were picked up in a timely manner? Because the way it's framed, it's that if you are in a crisis there and now, it is there for you. And I think we have to make sure that it is there for you. If we market in mental health, an immediate response, if that's the marketing product or the marketing promise, and there's an awful lot of marketing in Darkness Into Light, well, we have to make sure that the calls are answered. The calls are answered when someone needs them. And I don't think the information is there as it relates to the calls, how quickly they're answered, what's the drop-off rate, and also to... and I know Darkness, I know Pieta, sorry, has been struggling financially and has made $3 million worth of cuts. But like 34% of the money that's raised through Darkness Into Light is reinvested into promoting Darkness Into Light or other initiatives to raise money for Pieta House. And that seems like a massive amount of money. So if they're raising 13.68 million as they did in 2024, 4.7 million euro of that money that's raised goes on fundraising and public engagement. So that's a massive percentage of, just over 13.5 million raised. And then you spend another 4.7 million of that money to try and promote the next one. Like, it does sometimes feel that you're chasing the tail, and yet they end up with a 3.6 million euro deficit and have announced a 3 million cost cutting plan for 25-26. And then here in Donegal, obviously, there's just one centre in Letterkenny, which I'm sure does an amazing job. Over or almost, in fact, in excess of a third of the support that's offered, it's like 12 counselling sessions, are done via phone or remotely now. Again, if this is being seen as the government's response to it because there's an absence of other stuff there as well, I mean, how effective is that for a rural county like us in Donegal who don't have proper travel to get in and out of Letterkenny and the remote element of it? 35% of all Pieta appointments are conducted via phone or video. And, the government provide just about 20% of Pieta's funding, but, that could be seen as outsourcing a core medical responsibility in terms of people's mental health in a crisis. So as I say, I'm not trying to discourage anyone. I'm not trying to punch down, and people should definitely support it. But there's a few. I would like to know how many of those 100,000 texts and calls were when they were answered, how quickly they were answered. I would like to know a strong argument for reinvesting 4.7 million euro out of 13.6 million euro raised back into trying to raise more money. It just doesn't seem like a fantastic... it seems like a big amount of that money raised, to be honest with you. But anyway, it's 34 cent for every euro raised goes back into trying to raise more money. But anyway, it is what it is. And I just hope it's... I just hope that we if we need to do more on top of that, that we don't see that as the solution and that people get left behind. And that's not necessarily go up Pieta House or whatever. But anyway, listen, there's another walk taking place on Saturday the 9th of May. This is tomorrow night. Well, it's the early hours of this morning, I'd imagine. In fact, it is the early hours of this morning. So you can go to Binion Beach Car Park at 4 a.m. and take part in the Sunrise Brews at Binion. Well, that's what's going to take place after this walk. It's a walking into the sunlight walk. And all donations on this one are to the Lough Swilly RNLI. So get along to Binion Beach at 4 a.m. The walk's at 4:15. That's in the early hours of tomorrow morning. And then have a cup of tea or coffee afterwards as well. And you'll get on with your day and you'll feel like you've done something really nice and something really important. Now, a couple of other things that I want to give a mention to. You're invited to come and share a cuppa with us this tea day and help support people and families in the community or in our community living with dementia. The venue is Sadie's House, 10 St. Union's Terrace, Raffoe, and it's tomorrow. And it runs from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. tday.ie. So it's part of a broader initiative. So that's lovely, isn't it? Lots of nice things going on. If you get that other thing into me, Caroline, I'll give that a mention. Sorry, I don't want to put you under pressure. It's Friday, you know. Right, roads. What's the problem? Well, it's not to do with roads. What's the problem with Councillor Meehan calling out everything he doesn't agree with as far right? I've listened to him on numerous occasions spouting hatred and division on many issues. Does he not know that many cities and towns of England are overrun with illegal immigrants? Yes, they're illegally, and all reform want to do is send them back where they came from, where they can apply to come across legally, the same as the USA, Canada and Australia. Why should Britain be any different? Reform have done so well. It's because people agree with him, and that's what democracy is all about. Now, what democracy is all about as well is diverging views in the political landscape. So I would presume Declan Meehan would be all right saying that he's a left-leaning politician, and I presume Reform would be all right being referred to as right-leaning. But that is democracy. The difference is that we can agree or disagree, but do so respectfully. So just because you might disagree with Declan Meehan, it doesn't mean you should dislike him. And just because he might disagree with your attitudes or your comments, it doesn't mean that he's going to dislike you either. That is democracy. That's pluralism. That is us conversing, getting together, having a chat. You know what I mean? So Reform are more right-leaning. This is why I try and avoid the word far right, because that has become a slur as such. But right wing isn't. You're in the right wing of politics. You're in the left wing of politics. Conservative, liberal. But you know, it doesn't mean we can't all coexist, come together when we need to, but also politely disagree when we have different points of views. It would be such a boring world if we all had the same points of view. Greg, would be grateful if you could announce a clean-up taking place tomorrow at 11 a.m. in Willowbrook and Elms in Glencar, Letterkenny. It's organised by the Residents Associations, and if you can get out, please do. Lovely thing to do. Get out in your community, pick a few bits and bobs up, and make it look even more beautiful than it already is. Now, there is a walk into light at Malin Head. It's on the 9th of May. It's leaving from the Crossroads car park at 4:15 a.m. Tea and coffee at the end, and it's all for Huey's Corner, a wonderful, wonderful charity. They are a child and adolescent therapeutic centre doing fantastic work. Every single penny collected, every penny goes towards Huey's Corner. So if you are in Inishowen or you'd like to make the way up and say, I walked into the light in Malin Head, worth driving up to even if you're an hour or so away, wouldn't it be? So meet up at the Crossroads car park, 4:15 a.m, tea and coffee at the end. Now, the 2026 Brookless House The Head Walk is on Saturday in the 9th of May, so it's a busy day for walking tomorrow. Leaving Brookless Community Centre at 4:20 a.m. There's no registration required. Donations on the morning of the walk. Proceeds will be donated to local charities that work with people suffering from mental health issues. There's 2K and 5K walks available, fully insured and marshalled. Well done. Come along and have fun. So that's if you're in the south of the county, get along to Brookless. It's beautiful too. Right, now, let me see. My latest podcast guest, we have a podcast, you know, it's called The Greg Hughes Podcast. We're getting very clever. And we release new episodes every Friday morning at 11 a.m. And we talk about all different things. You know, some really important topics that need highlighting, some very important parts of our history that it's good to record and maybe educate people that aren't aware about them. But we also chat to some fantastic regular people who've had really quite remarkable lives. Paddy Kerrigan. And if you're listening in the south of the county, and particularly in Bundoran, you may be familiar. Paddy Kerrigan is a gentleman who is in Australia. He lives in Australia, but he's from Bundoran. And he hasn't been in Bundoran in any meaningful way in terms of living for a very, very long time. But as soon as you hear him speak, you'll recognise his Bundoran Ballyshannon accent. It is so unique. But Paddy Kerrigan was a young lad who was working as a carpenter in Bundoran. And he went into carpentry and took up his trade there, worked on houses around Ireland, Scotland and elsewhere. And then he took a notion to head to Australia, him and his cousin, I believe it was, because they just wanted to get on with life. And he went over there thinking he'd come back. And we'll hear some of that in the clip that I'm going to play for you. But he ended up being there for a very long time. And he's still there now. 96 next week, actually, Paddy is. And I had a chat with him. And we talked about how he got over there. So different then. You know, letters. I don't know, this sounds like it sounds obvious. But I'm sitting here in Ireland talking to Paddy in Australia. And, you know, it's in real time, video, audio. But for him to get contact back to his family, it was a letter on a boat, and the boat went all the way back to Ireland, and then to get a return letter, the same thing happened to in return. And even just simply getting to Australia was a mammoth journey on a boat over there for him, which of course made it difficult to come forward and back. So the full podcast with Paddy is available at 11 a.m. for you to listen to whenever you like. It's available in three places, primarily on our website, highlandradio.com. You can also listen to the podcast on Spotify. Just subscribe, if you don't mind, to The Greg Hughes Show. And that podcast is in there and released every single Friday. And we're also on Apple too, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. So no excuse. And there's a whole tranche of conversations in there. I think we're up to episode 18 or 19. So we're really banging them out. And as I say, there's something for everyone there. But we're going to now hear a little bit from... we're going to hear now a little bit from Paddy and our podcast and our chat that we had.
Oh, well, that was in my head always, that if I didn't like it, I wouldn't stay. That was one of the things I had fixed in my mind. If I don't like it, I'll save enough money to come back. But I didn't. Australia was the best country, and I think still is one of the best countries in the world. A lot of opportunity here. And the climate, of course, was better than Ireland.
Yes, indeed. And your hips and knees and back will probably attest to that, I would say. And yeah, of course, still thousands of people travel from here to Australia every single year. We're speaking now, and this is the remarkable thing. We're speaking now thanks to your technical assistant, Danny. We're speaking to each other on other ends of the world. A very different story back then in keeping in contact with home, Paddy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, really, I think the best means was by letter. And that used to take, if you wrote a letter, to get a letter back, you'd have to wait about 6 or 7 weeks because the mail in those days went by ship. So it took a long time to get over there, and then your folk on the other side to reply. So it was quite some distance between the two areas and took a while by ship.
And did that bother you? Were you homesick, or were you just so in love with where you were and the people that you were with that you didn't feel homesick?
No, and this is a surprising thing. I was never, ever, although I had great parents and great friends, I was never homesick. Now, I had a cousin who was older than I, John Kerrigan, and he used to cry himself to sleep every night here, homesick for home and his parents. He stayed here for about a year, went back, came out again, and went back again. You know, God's truth, poor old John. I've never heard from him for years, so I don't know whether he's still alive or not.
But he just couldn't settle either there or here.
No, he couldn't. He couldn't. He was broken-hearted out here. And then when he went home, he found things weren't so bloody good there either. So he came back to Australia. Yeah.
So when did you... So after you went working over there, you were working in hydroelectric space, were you? What were you doing specifically to begin with?
Well, I served my apprenticeship with the wonderful tradesman John Daly in Bundoran as a carpenter and joiner. And the beauty of it in those days, if you were in a small town and you were serving your apprenticeship, not alone did you do carpentry, but you did bricklaying and plastering and plumbing and all the other things. So you got a great round training in all the trades. So it was a wonderful place to serve an apprenticeship.
And of course, it gave you the tools, i.e. your skills, to do whatever you wanted to do, really.
Sorry?
Your apprenticeship gave you the tools, the ability to do whatever you wanted to turn your hand to, really.
Yeah, exactly. I still have those tools after all these years. Yeah,
which
I've still got the toolbox that I made to come out here.
Really?
Yes. I'm looking around at my wife now to see maybe she's burned it. For still there.
And yeah, still there. Is that because it was sentimental, or is that just in your nature to keep things of value to yourself?
Oh, well, I love my parents and my brothers and sisters, but I suppose I was brave enough to stay away and just go back when I could afford to have a holiday and return to Australia.
Brilliant stuff. So what was your working life in Australia, Paddy?
I worked with the Norwegian firm, Selmer Engineering. They were brought out by the Snowy Mountains Authority in the early days because they were the best country in the world that had experience of hydroelectricity. So they hired them to come out and start the scheme off. So they were very, very good to work for. Then the French at Tudis at Enterprises, they got a contract and they came, and they were very good to work with. And then, lo and behold, we got the Americans, Waukeyser, Walsh, Perini and Raymond. And you never heard anybody scream at workers like they did. And the problem was they were used to the occupational forces in Europe, and they scared the daylights. You know, I saw this happen. It happened in my presence. We were coming out of the tunnel one day at T1 power station, and one of the Americans was coming in with the surveyor. And when the American saw this laborer that was working out with me, he let a roar out of him. "What the goddamn hell are you doing?" And the surveyor dropped the Thiad light, which is worth about £1,000, and broke it.
I forgot that. I forgot that was ending. I could listen to him all day. That's just a sample of our chat with Bundoran's Paddy Kerrigan, who's been a lifetime in Australia and received one of the highest commendations you can for contributing to Australian life. And we dig into that in that podcast in a little bit more detail. And we wish him in advance a happy 96th birthday. I think it's in the next week or so as well. And so fresh on it too. Just no doubt about that. And there's even a song. He even sings me a song, which I kind of mess up a little bit, but he sings me a song. Anyway, listen to the podcast. Beautiful voice, a beautiful man. And he had his daughter, Danny, on his right and his wife on his left, who hasn't burnt that toolbox, which is good news. So that podcast available for you at 11 a.m. It's on our website, highlandradio.com, or check out all of the podcasts there and on Spotify. Just search Greg Hughes Show, and also on iTunes. I think they call it Apple Podcasts now. I don't have an iPhone, but I believe they call it Apple Podcasts now. So thank you to Paddy. New episodes 11 a.m. every single Friday, unless we take a break for the summer. Are we taking a break for the summer or ploughing through? We're thinking about taking a maybe taking a short siesta. Start next week? No. All right. Finn Valley College, they're doing a fundraiser for Cycle Against Suicide today by doing a static cyclothon. All the community welcome to join in. It's at the Finn Valley Centre in Stranorlar. So they're still contributing to, in the Twin Towns, still contributing to that charity there, of course, just in different ways. Now, the Inishowen Palestine Solidarity Campaign is launching the Apartheid Free Zone campaign in Buncrana tomorrow. The event begins at noon at Buncrana Cinema, with activities continuing downstairs in St. Mary's Hall. Christine McGillan is speaking to me now on behalf of Inishowen IPSC. So what is this? Good morning to you, by the way. What is this initiative about then, please, Christine?
Good morning, Greg, and thanks for having me. Yeah, Apartheid Free Zone is a global initiative that's going to help to transform our local communities into spaces of solidarity with the Palestine struggle for freedom, justice and equality. And we were motivated to become part of that when we're out on our bridges and our marches and the stalls that we have. People coming up to us and saying, what can we do? You know, they're looking at the live stream genocide on their phones and they're saying, it's awful. And, you know, really genuinely brokenhearted like ourselves and saying, what can we do? So we thought this is something you can do because it's very difficult. You know, Israel has been shielded from accountability really by the US and Western governments. It's hard to, you know, people feel powerless, but this is something that you can do, and it's very simple. And
so beyond the event itself, are you looking for Buncrana as a whole to become an apartheid-free zone, which I presume means not sort of stocking certain products, or presumably also engaging with certain services either?
Yes, we're starting with Buncrana, but actually we have we've got about 14 or 15 different businesses signed up already, and they're not all in Buncrana. Some are in Ballyliffin and some up in Mallon, and you know we'll hear more about that tomorrow. But it would be ideal to have all of Inishowen an apartheid-free zone, and we're calling it a journey because you know this is not something that's going to happen overnight. And you're right, it's about not selling Israeli products and it's about not buying Israeli products because the Israeli occupation system needs constant funding and BDS works to end the funding by organizing consumer, cultural, academic, trade and economic boycotts and divestment. Mm. And they've had a lot of success worldwide with that already. So we're going to try and do our part. One of the things we'll be telling people is, you know, first of all, there's an appeal out to all the businesses in and around Inishowen to come tomorrow and hear from the speakers what this is about and how they can help. And it's a call out to consumers, you know, to become ethical shoppers.
Yeah. So some of the speakers, Omar Bogati, co-founder of BDS, he's joining remotely. Bernadette McCallisky, Damien Quinn, Palestinian journalist Mohammed Samana, an IPSC member, Mariam Kaleni. And it all begins at 12 noon tomorrow in the Buncrana Cinema with activities downstairs, St. Mary's Hall. I presume you're saying, listen, even if you're not really sure what this is all about and why it has remained so important to so many people for so long, you know, come along and there's going to be information that might guide your opinion one way or other. But, you know, information is power. So everyone's welcome, I presume, then.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody is welcome. It's an open discussion. And we're all going to learn and learn from each other and hear from the speakers who have experience, you know, in this. And simple things like downloading an app called Boycott. And you just, you know, I use it all the time when I go shopping. If I'm not sure about something, you know, if I pick up a bag of carrots, for example, in a supermarket, and I can't see on the label where it's from, or I can't see on the box. I just scan the barcode and it tells me where it's from, and then I don't buy it, you know. It's that simple. And the other thing is, you know, the alternatives. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No, I'm listening intently to you.
Sorry. The other thing is, it's mainly bigger supermarkets that would be selling Israeli products. So, you know, supporting local businesses is a great alternative. That's what we have found, you know.
All right, Christine, listen, thank you for your time this morning. I'm sure it will be a busy, successful event. That was Christine McGillan there, speaking there on behalf of the Inishowen Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, if that's something that's of interest to you. 12 noon tomorrow at Buncrana Cinema. Activities continuing downstairs then at St. Mary's Hall. Are you talking about charities and expenditure, says the listener? Where's the $4 million per week that the National Lottery claims to spend on projects? I'd have thought that $4 million per week over the last 20-odd years would be very visible everywhere you go, but I never see a single project. Where does all that money go? Well, the difference with that is, you see, you can actually find out where it goes. You know, whether or not you feel it in your local community, it's a big old island, this. You can actually go on a website and find out specifically where this money goes. On the issue of the government, people should remember it's the far left that has destroyed this country. It's time for a right-wing government to try and bring a bit of normality back to the country. The EU is not a democracy anymore. It's a dictatorship. Now, the thing is that I know we all know what's what, but whether you... I mean, we don't have a far-left government at the moment. We have a left-of-centre government, maybe you could argue, and maybe a slightly similar opposition in terms of the main opposition. I don't know how you want to frame that yourself. But any extreme is not healthy. And I think anyone who... I think people might be surprised if it was a far right, you know, in other words, far right of the right wing government in this country. I think you might find things, if you look through all the policies and all the things that would be done, you might go, all right, okay, well, there's certain things I agree with, the popular stuff I agree with, but I didn't realise you were going to do that. And we have seen that in other countries, and it's kind of, we've seen then a move back more to the centre. Hi, Greg, can you ask what do people do with their loved ones' mass cards after death? Right, I don't know. I presume that's subjective. I would imagine some people keep them, and maybe in a box, and maybe over time they might open the box and go through them, reflect on them, remind themselves of them. Others might just donate them. I don't know. I think it's very subjective. I don't think there's a one answer to that. So I'm not sure if you're coming in as to what you might do with yours. It's how you feel. Are you talking about recycling them, or is it a more of a broader question? Let me know if there's anything further to that you want me to put out there to the people. Remoulin resident here. The roadworks are an inconvenience for sure, but as Greg said, you can't make an omelette without cracking those blooming eggs. We just have to be patient while the work is going on. It just can't be done without disruptions. Major work, it's almost impossible. And Remoulin too, it's not like you can do it at night time because it's a residential area too. So, you know, you're twixt and between there in terms of how you can do something that's really quite significant with, you know, minimal disruption. It's a tough one. Shannon Wilkins in studio with me for Scroll Patrol. So she patrols what you scroll. And good morning to you, Shannon.
Hello, Greg.
How are you? How's your week been? Are you all right? Yeah,
it's good. Been busy,
busy weekend.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah. Busy day. It's been quick. Busy week.
And then I did the Northwest 10K. So now I'm kind of like, am I going to become a runner? So I've kind of committed to that.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, so.
You did it in quite a decent time, didn't you?
I wouldn't say that. Manageable. Like, I think.
An hour and eight or an hour and. What was it?
An hour and like 10.
Well, 35 minutes there for 5K is not
like
bad.
Like, no training for a 10K, you know? Mm. So it wasn't too bad.
35 minutes for no training, 35 minutes a 5K is it's pretty decent. Meryl Streep was interviewed, and she's always had a bit of an affinity with Donegal because of her involvement in the film, probably you're going to mention. So, what was she saying?
She's a wee Donegal diva, so she gave the backstory to her family connection to Donegal. So it's Hornhead Dunfanaghy, and then Grace Strain was her great granny, I think, who then married a man named Harry Wolfe. But she's actually kept that connection. She's named her daughter Grace Gummer after Grace Strain. And Grace Gummer is actually the actress that you see in Love Story, Carolyn Bessette and John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
No.
So her career's taken off at the moment. And she mentioned as well, Meryl Streep, that whenever she came to Donegal for filming Dancing at Lunasa, everyone kind of looked like her. Mm. So it gave her a wee boost. And then I started thinking about all people I know in Dunfanaghy, and I was like, who looks like Meryl Streep?
And who did you come up with?
Nobody, sorry. So any cousins, send a wee picture.
What is the Met Gala? Now, I mean, like most people who listen to the show on a regular basis will know I'm one of the most youngest and relevant broadcasters in radio, and I'm pretty across stuff, but I don't know, what is the Met Gala?
So basically celebrities get to dress up and raise funds Met Museum in New York.
Okay.
So there's a different theme every year. This year's theme was kind of along the lines of art, I think. Blake Lively always slays at these. She looks beautiful, but obviously we have a controversy at the moment with her and Justin Baldoni for the lawsuit for the abuse.
That not settled? That's settled.
That's settled this week, so that's good, when that came out.
That's good. Weight loss, though, for the Met Gala. What's the angle here? That's the line you've given me.
All I could think about was the Met Gala to us is probably the Emrose.
Yeah.
So before it's Emrose, awards, you're feeling a wee bit bloated.
Yes.
What would you do? I would maybe like take a laxative if you're feeling like that.
I'm not sure that's good advice.
Lauren Sanchez Bezos lost 2 pounds in the hours before the Met Gala. So she put on a firefighter suit, did the full routine, obstacle course, high intensity functional training wearing the suit, and through smoke filled rooms.
Right, so if we
£2.
So if we get to the Imro, you're heading down to the County Fire Station.
Yeah. I don't think I'd lose.
But,
weight cutting,
you see in MMA and boxing, you can lose, but I don't know, it's water that you're losing.
Exactly.
Right, so it's only water. You're not losing inches. You're losing, you're losing liquid.
I know, and it's only going to last so long because you're going to go drinking then.
Okay.
So you're going to get more bloated.
Dave Duke, don't really like mentioning iRadio talent, but I'll make an exception for Dave.
It just got me thinking, what would it have to do?
What happened? No one knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm getting there, Greg. Okay. Gee, Mac. So recently, there was a big campaign for Focus Ireland to raise as much money as possible, and Dave managed to raise €10,000 for Focus Ireland by getting a tattoo on his bum.
What did he get?
He got mayo for Sam, and he's a leecher.
Okay.
So the listeners got to decide.
I don't think 10 grand's enough for that, even for charity.
But even, like, who's going to see it, really? Do you know?
It's one of those things that you would always see. What would you get?
I don't know. See, the whole point of it is listeners get to pick.
But you don't
something
have any tattoos, I don't think, do you?
No, I do.
Do you? Right, okay.
If anyone doesn't know that, oops.
Sorry. So, sorry about that. But I did give you an out to say no. But if you were getting, not even something that's a bit fun, but what is there a tattoo you'd love to get?
I swear to God, last year in Croke Park, it was my birthday. It was either the semi-final or the quarter-final. And I was just so proud of Donegal, I actually contemplated getting a Donegal tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Either the crest or a wee map.
I would like to get, if you had to get one on your bum, Errigal would be good.
But then, like, would you have to get muckish on the other side to even it out?
No, just Errigal.
Because then why,
On the middle.
Down the middle. I don't know if anyone would actually volunteer to tattoo
no
that.
One will see it.
But, like, imagine the tattoo artist.
But I think an Errigal tattoo would be cool, actually.
I don't
have any tattoos. I watched Witness on Netflix. It's a great show. I'm a bit behind the curve. I think it was released a couple of months ago. Really deep show that makes you think. A really strong subject matter in it, but I did enjoy it. Should I Marry a Murderer? It keeps flashing up on my screen. Have you watched it?
I binged it. So it's actually really good because it makes you think. This is a terrible thing to say, but the boys, the cyclist that they killed, he was out at night and a big, I think it was 100-mile-an-hour road, and they knocked him down.
Yeah.
So they were like, we don't want to get done for this. It's kind of his fault he was out late at night.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking of the safety, even for the 555 and all that. They have support crews. So why did this man not have a support crew?
Yeah, that's victim blaming, you see.
I know.
But I suppose, we have a shared responsibility on the roads. Yeah.
But
is it a good show, though?
You should definitely watch it.
Okay. Unchosen, is that on Netflix? Have you not watched The Apex yet?
Apex, not yet.
Like, it's viral. Like, some of the scenes in it have gone huge.
See, this is the thing. I might have seen the scenes, but not known that it's Apex.
Okay. Unchosen, what's that about?
It is about a cult in the UK. So apparently there are, like, over 2,000 cults in the UK. And this is one of those religious ones. So any sort of sinning, you can get exiled from the community and stuff like that. And what's wrong?
I watched the preacher one. So I've kind of done the cult stuff for a wee while. Do you know that sort of way?
I am never done with cults.
Yeah. I'll probably will watch that, but I just need to digest the other one first because I need to switch up the genres. All right, then. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
That was Shannon Wilkins. Her attempt to keep us up to date with what's happening on your phones, your laptops, your tellies, etc. Scroll Patrol back with you, of course, next Friday. And that's where we leave it on the show for today. Thank you so much, by the way, to all of you who listen to the programme, those of you who watch the show, whether you text in or not. It's great to have you texting in or calling the show. Thank you very much for all of your interaction, not just this week, but every single week. We will be back on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. A big thanks until then from Shannon Wilkins, who works on the show, and our...
Can I just point in, someone text me, I have a tattoo of a unicorn on my bum. I'm not revealing who it was, but wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Now you have to reveal it. I was just in the middle of saying goodbye to everyone. Thank you very much, Shannon. I like that, though. I like to fly by the seat of my pants.